In the backwater of the universe of investments, we find hybrid securities. Preferred stocks, convertible bonds, convertible preferred stock. They give us the advantages of both worlds of stocks and bonds, and they give us the disadvantages. So they're the best of both worlds, and they're the worst of both worlds. And what we're going to find is that for the vast majority of us retail investors, long-term oriented, they're not really something that we concern ourselves with. But remember, everyone's different, and you may decide that you want to dabble with hybrid securities. So we're quickly going to run through these and find that probably not is the answer. So let's take a look at slide number 2. What are preferred stocks? Preferred stocks are stocks that have a prior claim ahead of the common stocks on the income and assets of the issuing firm. Remember, bonds were ahead of stocks. Common stocks is what we've been talking about all semester long. Stocks are at the end of the line after everybody gets their pick at the corporation's assets. Preferred stocks are in between. So some people call them hybrid securities. They're a part of hybrid securities because they work kind of like bonds in that they pay typically a fixed dividend. Unlike what we saw with common stocks, where common stocks, once they become large enough and are growing, and they've, you know, they've gone through their major growth spurt and now they're growing slowly and they're throwing off dividends, they raise those dividends, typically, you know, at least with the rate of inflation. Preferred stock typically don't do that. In much the same way as a bond, they pay a fixed interest amount. And that's why we call them fixed income stocks. Right. Preferred stocks represent equity. Therefore, they don't count as debt on the corporate balance sheet. The dividends, like common stocks, are optional. They don't have to be paid, unlike a bond's interest payments, which have to be paid. And in the case of corporate default, as we said, preferred stocks have priority over common stockholders, but are subordinate to bonds. So when you work in the industry, you'll often hear people talk about preferred stock as if they were bonds. In fact, the first gentleman I worked with in the industry used to call them, they're like bonds. They're bonds. They're not stocks. And you get this feeling that some people hear the term preferred stock and they say, oh, isn't that what I want over just plain common stock? And the answer is typically no, for a few reasons. One of them is the fixed nature of the dividend yield. So let's continue. What are the advantages? Well, like a bond, they have highly predictable income stream and typically have an excellent record of meeting dividend payments. But here's the fly in the ointment for the vast majority of us retail investors. There are significant tax benefits if the stock is owned by another corporation. So right off the bat here, we find that they are more advantageous to corporations. So corporations are willing, you know, all things being equal, and they never are, to pay more than a retail investor would be willing to pay for. So that's really the reason that preferred stock are really not that advantageous to individual investors. Now, what are some of the disadvantages? Well, kind of like bonds, they have a susceptibility to inflation. But unlike bonds, the dividends can be suspended or postponed, which is what can happen with a common stock. And they lack the potential capital gains that common stocks have. And they don't normally pay as well as bonds. But the yield has been, you know, fairly close to bonds over time. So you see, they have the advantages of stocks and bonds, and they have the disadvantages of stocks and bonds. So in my humble opinion, if you want growth and income, you buy stocks. If you want income, you buy bonds. But as we said, you are now an official investment guru, so you at least need to know about these things, if only to explain to people why the vast majority of us are really not that interested in them. What is the yield? Well, it's the same formula that we saw with common stocks. We take the annual dividend income and divide it by the current market price. So we've already seen this formula. If the stock, the preferred stock, were paying $2 a share, we would divide that by the market price of what happens to be $27.50. And we find that this stock, this preferred stock, is paying us 7.27%. Now, if that were the original par value, the stated value that, I'm sorry, par yield, the par dividend, the stated value that they said they were going to pay, that would be a pretty darn good dividend over time, wouldn't it? And indeed, some people would be very happy with that. But remember, it's not a bond. They can postpone or stop the dividends at any quarter. They can say, sorry, we can't pay the dividends this year and this quarter. And that's perfect. Unlike a bond. Excuse me. Pardon me. Okay. So what are the pricing? As with bonds, the prices fluctuate mostly inversely to interest rates, although there is a greater risk of non-payment of dividends. Recall that dividends are not mandatory. And unlike bonds, where the bond issuer is in default if the interest is not paid. So we would do basically the zero growth model. We take the dividend income and divide it by whatever the prevailing interest rates are, or maybe our required rate of return. And if the dividend income were $2.50 and interest rates were 12%, which is, you know, I've got to go back to the 1980s for that, we would see that that stock would be sold at about $20.83. That's a pretty high interest rate. Probably should knock that down a bit. Don't you think? I think so too. Slide 6. Some preferred stock are convertible, and we'll discuss convertibles in detail in a few slides, so stick with us. So convertible preferred. This is a provision that allows us to, if we're the preferred stockholder, take advantage of any major capital gains that the common stock had. We bought our preferred stock for the income, and we're getting our $2 a year or whatever, $2.50 a year. And then all of a sudden, the company does really, really well. The common stock zooms up, doubles, triples, quadruples. Well, sorry, you're still going to get your $2.50 a year. That's it. But if you had convertible preferred, you have the option. You don't have to take advantage of this option, but you have the option to convert that into common stock. But again, the common stock is more volatile than the preferred stock. Yeah, so that's the, we'll discuss convertibles in detail in just a bit here. Now, some preferred stock are called floaters, floating rate, adjustable rate. The dividends are adjusted periodically in line with prevailing interest rates, which is a way to partake in higher interest rates if interest rates are going higher. But if interest rates are going lower, of course, they adjust them downward. So there's a provision you have to be aware of if you are dabbling in preferred stock. And of course, as we saw with bonds, there's senior preferred and junior preferred, which means that those preferred stock have prior claim or prior preferred over any junior preferred stock, which of course are subordinate to bonds and all those senior bonds and junior bonds, but they have claim first before the common stock. Now, what's this cumulative preferred? Now, this is something we're going to ask you on the exam. And by the way, I put three questions on the exam, maybe four, but I'll give you the three questions, okay? They'll be on the website because in reality, you know, as we said, this stuff is, it's important for you to be aware of them, but it's really not that important for us investors. Cumulative preferred is definitely something that preferred stockholders would want to have. It's definitely a desirable feature. Preferred dividends are not mandatory and can be skipped, just like common dividends and any other dividends. But if the preferred stock is a cumulative preferred stock, then the foregone dividends are said to be in arrears, which is a fancy word of saying, hey, you didn't pay them to me, But you know what? I'm not going to forget that you didn't pay them to me. You owe them me. You owe them to me if you start paying dividends again. You see what happens? The in arrears dividends must be paid before any other dividends can be paid, whether preferred or common. So they have to go back to when they stopped paying you dividends and pay those dividends first before they can pay any new dividends. So that's definitely a desirable feature if you're interested in preferred stock, right? I think so. Okay, next slide. Okay, callable. I've never even seen one of these things, so I don't really know what they look like. But I guess it says callable next to the preferred stock. As with bonds, some preferred stock can be called away. Because remember, there's a fixed dividend, but what if interest rates fall? The issuer of the preferred stock will say, well, we don't want to keep paying this high interest rate on our preferred stock. Let's call them in and reissue them at a lower interest rate. Just as we talked about callable bonds, right? So obviously non-callable is preferable, more desirable, callable being less desirable, but the callable will probably pay us a little bit more. And then there's this rare form that, again, I've never even seen, called participating preferred stock that allows investors to participate in earnings beyond the stated dividend rate. So if you do get involved in preferred stock and you find any of these callable or participating preferred stock, would you send them my way so I can at least take a look at them? Yeah. What is the bottom line on preferred stock? Preferred stock is normally owned by corporations. Why? Because of the tax advantages that corporations have when they own the preferred stock. Some individual investors may acquire a taste for them, but in my humble opinion, you're better off with common stock for growth and income and bonds for income. Enough said, I think so. Now, let's turn our attention to convertible securities. There are convertible bonds and convertible preferred stock. Now, we're going to basically use examples for convertible bonds, but everything works the same with convertible preferred stock. So these are fixed income obligations, bonds, preferred stock, that can be converted into a specified number of shares of the issuing company's common stock. So it's sometimes called deferred equity or an equity kicker, because as we said, if you invest in bonds or preferred stock, you're really kind of fixed. That's why they call them fixed securities. You know what you're going to get in terms of interest, and in the case of the bonds, you're going to get your principal back. But wouldn't it be nice if the company did really, really well for you to be able to participate in those capital gains? Well, if you own a convertible bond or convertible preferred stock, you have the option to convert that bond or that preferred stock into shares of common stock. That's typically 20 to 1 for a bond. So you have a $1,000 bond, let's say, and all of a sudden the company does really well for whatever reason, and now that bond would be worth far more than $1,000 if we converted it into 20 shares of stock. Say the stock price went to 100. Oh my goodness. We could convert our $1,000 bond into $2,000 worth of stock. But once we do that, we can't go the other way. Okay, once we've done that, if the stock then craters, oh well, you know, you're stuck. You converted the bond into stock. You can't say, I want my bond back. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. So what are the conditions of the conversion feature of convertible securities? Well, there's usually a period where the issue cannot be converted. Usually you have to wait 5, 10 years, called the deferment period. If you remember the call deferment period, same idea. So they're going to say you have to wait 5 years. And then there's the conversion ratio, the number of shares of common stock into which the convertible security can be converted. And the example on the previous slide was 20 shares for one bond. So you take your $1,000 bond, you say, I want to convert this bond into 20 shares. They take your bond away, no more interest payments, no more principal payment, and you get the 20 shares of the stock. The conversion price is the price per share at which the common stock will be delivered to the investor. So if it were a 20 to 1, 20 shares for one $1,000 bond, the conversion price would be $50. So the calculations are really very straightforward. There's a worksheet that we'll refer to, and the assignment is 5 points, but it'll take you all of 10 minutes. So you really want to do it because it's pretty straightforward. The conversion value is an indication of what a conversion issue would trade for if it were priced to sell on the basis of its corresponding common stock market price. So the conversion value is equal to the conversion ratio times the market price. So let's say that 20 shares for every one bond, say the stock price were $60. Well, now that bond is worth at least $1,200. 20 shares times $60 market price gives us $1,200. So right now we could convert our bond, a $1,000 bond, into 20 shares and have $1,200. However, what's going to happen? The convertible bond would probably sell for more than the $1,200 because of the ability to convert the stock, plus the fact that the bond is still generating interest. And that's called the conversion premium. That's the amount by which the market price of a convertible security exceeds its conversion value. The conversion premium is the market price minus the conversion value. So in our example, if this bond were a $1,000 bond with a conversion ratio of 20 shares for every one bond, if the stock were trading at $60, we said that on the previous slide, the conversion value is 20 shares times $60 market share, or $1,200. But let's say the bond is selling for $1,400. So the conversion premium is $1,400. The bond, that's what the bond holders want you to pay them. They say they know their bond is worth more because they've been watching the stock price too. And we see that the conversion value is worth $1,200. So the conversion premium, $1,400 minus $1,200, equals $200 of a conversion premium. The conversion parity is the price at which the common stock would have to sell in order to make the convertible security worth its present price. Conversion equivalent, conversion parity. So you take the market price of the convertible security divided by the conversion ratio. So in the previous example, we had a convertible bond selling for $1,400 with a 20-to-1 ratio. The stock would have to be selling at least $70 for the bond to be conversion equivalent, conversion parity. But as we saw, there's a conversion premium, so very rarely is going to hit the conversion parity because people are not stupid. They realize that their bond is worth more, so they're going to ask for more. And this is a graph that is in progress. My apologies. By the time you read this, I have somebody working on it who's actually good with graphics. I'm not. But this is the dynamic here. This is the convertible bond valuation dynamics. Typically, when you start off, the bond is worth more just from the fact that it's being a bond. Here's the value around 1,000. Let's say it's a par value of 1,000. And here is what the value would be if we were to convert it. So typically when you start off, the bond it's not worth it to convert it. You have to wait. And now this company is a company that makes a drug that is going to cure baldness, let's say. And all of a sudden the market hits and the drug does really, really well. And now the stock price zooms ahead. So now what happens is the bond is worth more than just being a bond. It's worth more because the stock price has gone above conversion value, right? And so now we see that the market price of this convertible security will go above that because there's that conversion premium. But all of a sudden it turns out that the drug turns people's liver into pate and the stock price falls, but the bond, the convertible bond, is going to fall to the point where it's worth what a bond would be worth. So you see, we got the bond value going along here, staying around 1,000, which is typical for bonds, but the stock is doing, not too badly here, but all of a sudden hits the big time. Now the convertible security is worth more because of the value from the stock, and then the stock falls down below that conversion value, and it turns back into a bond, basically. So we're hopefully by the time you see this, you will have a graphic that will do it justice, okay? This is my scribbles. And that is the dynamic of a convertible bond. But a convertible preferred stock kind of worked the same way, basically the same idea. So it's a dividend instead of an interest payment. So what's the bottom line on convertibles? They allow you to partake in the potential capital appreciation of the common stock with less risk because of the income from the convertible bond or the convertible preferred stock. If the stock price is below the conversion price, then the convertible securities price will be kept up because of its value from producing income, right? It's a bond, right? Or it's a preferred stock. But you pay for that reduced risk via that conversion premium. Again, as I've said, in my personal opinion, I believe that individual retail investors are best served by focusing their attention on common stocks for growth and income, bonds for income, but there are always exceptions. There's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. And that is our quick discussion of preferred stock, convertible bonds, convertible preferred stock, convertible securities. And now, dear students, oh my goodness, we are now going to go back to the very beginning of the semester and tie everything together with Chapter 11, Portfolio Diversification and Asset Allocation. And oh boy, am I excited. So we'll see you in our next presentation, Portfolio Diversification and Asset Allocation. Dear students, as always, we are so proud of you. Keep up the great work and bring honor and glory to your family, your friends, your coworkers, Southwestern Community College, and to yourself.